Welcome to the Voice of the Agent podcast. I'm Toby Martin, and I'm of course joined by Simon Ledbetter.
Hello!
Who is of course founder of the Voice of the Agent, and We Are Unchained. And that is especially relevant in today's episode because we are back on Voice of the Agent surveys, and we are back on Voice of the Agent report.
It never ends.
We are stuck on this interminable cycle of data. And what a joy it is.
Joyous in every way.
So the purpose of today's episode is to unpack the January 2026 Voice of the Agent survey results, which focus on sales and lettings. But before we get on to that, I think it's important because we are gaining new listeners all the time and newcomers to the Voice of the Agent. So a little bit of background information, if you please, Simon. Introduce us to the Voice of the Agent and tell us, where's it come from and where's it going?
So I'll do this relatively briefly so we don't lose the people who already listen to this and go, we know what it is, Simon. For those who are new, very simply is... Started the Voice of the Agent 4 years ago, basically to look at what the industry thought about what was going on in the market. Started as an annual survey, quite a big beast, went quarterly last year, now monthly to make it a much more manageable survey. But the point of it is to actually ask the people who are in the arena doing the job what they think, rather than the renter gobs like you and me. And basically really understand what their thinking is going on. It's born of years of experience of doing this stuff, which is basically... find out what people who are on the shop floor are actually doing and thinking, and you've got a much better sense of where the market is really going. And it's just been formed the debate. And the practical application of that is, if you fill it in, or even if you just download the report, you can compare how you're doing with a representative example of your peers. So you might think you're doing well, or you might think you're doing badly, but relative to your peers, you may be wrong. And that's what it's about, is to help the industry, an industry that you and I work in and love, just to find information that's not normally available to them or hides behind expensive paywalls and memberships. It's freely available to everyone.
And I want to pull you up on one particularly significant word there, which is representative, which is this. And I just want to establish this at the very start, that this is not just a summary of the findings of what a bunch of random people think. We can... tell me if I'm wrong, we can correctly accept these findings as proportionally representative of the industry as a whole, right?
Can I geek out on you?
Yeah, this is definitely the right place to do it.
So my background is market research, and I was a member for a long time of a member of the Market Research Society. There's quite strict rules on these things. And what you're ideally looking for is 95% confidence with a give or take 3 to 5% margin of error, which means in 95 cases out of 100, the answers will be that, give or take 3 to 5%. So the numbers that then come out can be trusted. And there's a magic number for the industry that we are, which is 338. So we need to get 338 responses to get it statistically significant. And we got quite a lot more than that. So yeah, it is representative, of course. And I'll say this, and somebody will go like, oh, I'm going to dismiss the whole research then. It is representative of people who filled the survey in. So if there is a cohort of people out there that will not fill in a survey, I can't say they're represented, but we've deliberately this time made it 4 minutes to complete.
Yeah, so bite-sized.
It used to take about 56 minutes to fill in, which, you know, we lost people by the... back half. But now we get, actually, while I think the completion rate is something like 78, 99%, the only reason why it's not 100% is some people filling the sales section and some people fill the letting section. So actually we have 100% completion rate for the bits that are relevant to the people who are filling in. So it is, and in the absence of nothing, it's brilliant.
And we reached over 500 respondents in the end, so we were safely over that representative threshold. So with that firmly established, let's discover what January's Voice of the Agent report tells us about the industry, which is, as I say, focusing very much on sales and lettings, and we're going to begin with the market in general and confidence of both consumers and agents. So the confidence data from We Are Unchanged shows that throughout 2025 and into early 2026, both the general public and property professionals remain positive about house prices. But the character of that confidence differs slightly. And now this is going to be a slight challenge. I'm going to attempt to describe what I'm looking at on my screen, which is two wiggly lines.
Good luck. You voted to do this, Tony.
Well, what's interesting is that we have this this trend of confidence, both among adults in the UK as a whole and home movers specifically. And what I find really interesting about this is that home movers are consistently more more confident in the market than the broader category of adults. But it's slightly more volatile in that their confidence peaks and troughs more significantly than the nation as a whole, which is quite a consistent level of 20% confidence. So I suppose that simply tells us, does it, Simon, that it confirms that active home movers are more heavily invested in the market, perhaps more knowledgeable about the market because they're having to do their research. But that peaks and troughs because they're more up to speed on what's happening.
Yeah, I know, indeed. Basically, what we're looking there is it's like a rolling 52-week average, which takes out all the sampling issues you may otherwise get. And it does move up and down. You're right that home movers are obviously much more engaged because they're buying and or selling. And therefore, they're watching the prices more. And, you know, because this is a net figure of people who think the house price is going to rise minus those people who think the house price is going to fall, it is almost always positive. In fact, it always is positive. We got closest to it ever slipping into a more people thought house prices would fall than rise during the 1 month of Truss. But around that, it's been a roller coaster. And if you look at the longer term data that's in the report, it's a real roller coaster. But the reality is home movers are always more confident, but the gap has closed. When we first did this in 2024, the gap was quite significant between home movers were very, very much more confident than the population as a whole. Now they're sort of like bumping along just above them, you know, more. I mean, I just crudely average up until the end of the year, crudely 25% versus 20% up and down and more variable. But it dropped quite a lot at the beginning of the end of the year into the beginning of this year. And, you know, historically, the ratio between home movers and everyone else was really significant. Now they're not a million miles apart. Mm. The thing I always make about this, and I was making a point of this actually in a presentation to someone else, is while I would love to say that confidence is a predictor of actually what's going to happen with houses, it doesn't.
Yeah.
There isn't a relationship between what's happened to the house price index, the actual house price index, and confidence. What it does tell you is the sheer volume of noise, hyperbole, from crisis to success that people are talking at house prices. So the joy of working in this industry is this tells you that this is a topic that people are really intimately engaged with, and you can take it, not take advantage, wrong term. You can exploit, again, the wrong word. You
capitalize.
Can use, you capitalize. That, thank you. That's why I work with you, Toby. So you can capitalize on this interest in it and what's going on in the market. But as we know, how bricks and mortar, they just keep going up and up and up and up and up.
Well, it was crossing my mind as well. And I know that we're not particularly delving into marketing in this report, but it's never far away from us, which it confirms that active home movers are receptive to messaging, that they are consuming and digesting information about the market that might affect them, and this data shows that because they feel differently and their feelings are more volatile than the standard UK adult, a home mover is receptive, and so therefore in your marketing you can capitalize on that. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, critically, there is no housing market. There are markets for houses. Mm. And as good old Kate Faulkner said, mm. and always eloquently describes it, and people should read her column in The Negotiator, she talked about this a lot, is we have markets for houses. So you can make it hyper-local, hyper local, regional, village based, town based, because all the national stats are actually, apart from the overall health of the economy and the health of the market, are meaningless to the person buying or selling that individual house. So use the interest, use the data, and also demonstrate your knowledge that actually confidence in house prices remains strong consistently. So whatever you hear about house prices collapses or crashes, that's not what the HPI data shows us, but nor is it what the market thinks generally about the future either. People are confident.
Okay. Meanwhile, we asked agents directly how they describe current market conditions, and half said normal. 44% leaned towards weakness rather than strength. 19%, including a lonely 1%, said either very strong at 1% or strong at 19%. So this is seems weighted slightly towards the slightly more cautious, dare I say it, pessimistic outlook on the market, but the vast majority are in the middle. And so what does that tell us about agent sentiment right now and the current market?
I mean, what's interesting about that curve is it's a pretty much standard bell curve distribution. It leans towards cautious. We were researching at the time that a certain friend of ours across the pond might decide to take a NATO ally's territory and plunge the world into a nuclear apocalypse, which wouldn't be much fun for the property market or anyone else, in fact. So there was probably a bit of caution there. But we also know that this is a market that is highly sensitive to anything that's going on out there. So people, it's almost like people are looking for an excuse to put off doing something. And if you give them excuse, they'll take it. So, I mean, there'll always be this chunk of the market that has to move, 800, 900,000 houses. And then there'll be the 100, 200, 300 that's kind of optional, not time sensitive. So what it tells me is there's a natural caution that shows that people are just going, we're uncertain. We don't quite know what Starmer's going to, is going to be a leadership challenge in the Labour Party. Is Trump going to do something that radically affects, slams tariffs on things that crushes the economy? There's so many variables out there at the moment. We live, what does Simon Gates, the perm, is it perma crisis? An excellent
Sounds more
description.
like Malcolm Tucker, a perma
I
crisis.
think he credits the person who gave it to him, but I mean, he was the one who coined it the first time when I heard it. And he's right, we do seem since 2008 to be pretty much living from one crisis to the next. Oh, is it polycrisis? A polycrisis or permacrisis? Whichever one it is, the point is that if you were to bet on what the future was going to be, you'd be a person quickly separated from your money, I think.
And looking again at this data, I think it's important to point out that there's only 5% of agents who live at the polar extremes. 1% very strong, 4% very weak. Sentiment is vastly weighted towards the centre, which just to reaffirm what you said about slight lack of certainty. 50% saying normal, and don't get me wrong, I think a lot of agents are very happy with a quote unquote normal market. That's a market that you can work in. But it maybe just indicates that we still don't quite know long term which way it's tipping.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. The next part of the survey focused on exactly what services the agents provided. And we broke it down into sales, lettings, and both. As a former lettings professional, I was particularly interested in this. And 49% of agents offer both a sales and a letting service. But I was interested to see that 35% of agents still only offer a sales-only service, which means that not enough have been listening to me banging on about lettings. And 16% offer a lettings only. And don't get me wrong, part of the reason for this question is just fact finding about the people completing the survey. But it also helps for me, I think, to paint a bit of a picture of opportunity as well. Because I've been saying for so long now that if you're not doing lettings, you're missing out on a wonderful opportunity to diversify your business, add a regular income stream, and most crucially, add a lot of value to your business.
100%. The value of your business is your lettings book. Because it's monthly recurring revenue. If you ever worked in the city or startups, what they care about is monthly recurring revenue, which is the lettings model. Of course, there's other things like the brand value and all that kind of stuff. But sales is so variable of what happens. And it's so cyclical. Lettings is consistent. And therefore, you're right, the perfect business has both sales and lettings. Sales pays for the holidays, the Ferrari, the bonuses, the all that good stuff. And lettings pays the costs. Ideally, both make a nice profit. But if you have a steady income and build a cyclical income on top of that, you've got a sustainable business model, to be honest with you. You can literally grind to a halt if you just sales. And in reality, lettings is intensive. So if you're just lettings, you're missing out on a margin that, you know, guess what landlords do? Buy and sell houses, buy and sell the property. Is it a third of lettings properties come onto the market every year? So you are missing a trick if you don't have lettings, and you know, and you speak far more knowledgeably about this than me, but from a being a non-agent, it's always blown my mind when brands just go, oh, we just do sales or we just do lettings, because like, don't you want to maximize your income possibility?
And I think what's the challenge there is you've got 35% of agents who don't offer a letting service who could really strengthen their business by doing so. Yet we are simultaneously moving into one of the most challenging times in which to set up a new lettings business. And so in a couple of weeks' time, we'll have another podcast coming out. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about this topic with a real lettings expert in Sophie Lang. And she makes the point in that episode that, yes, there is great opportunity, but you don't want to do that without really knowing what you're doing. So I think the challenge for those sales-only agents is you've got a real opportunity here, but you've also got to know what you're doing in the current climate. It's not something that you can just do off the back of a fag packet.
Agreed. It's 170 pieces of legislation now in England.
And growing rapidly with every passing week.
It's more reproductive than rabbits.
Those rental rabbits.
Hold on. Let's not go down the rabbit line.
We won't go down that rabbit, Warren. So we're going to really home in on the sales market now. We'll revert back to lettings in a little bit. We'll come back around to that. But we went into a bit more detail about people's experiences, sales agents' experiences in 2025, and also what they anticipate is coming down the line this year. Starting off with, did the number of vendors you worked with increase, stay the same, or decline in 2025? And this paints a fairly encouraging picture. We had the most popular answer was staying broadly the same, but actually the weighting of the responses was towards the upper end of the scale. So we had a total of 46% reporting some form of growth in the last year, 20% on increase significantly, which is actually quite remarkable. 20% of sales agents achieved significant growth in 2025, and 26% increased modestly. And then at the other end of the scale, we've only got 5% recording significant decrease in vendor numbers, and 17% a modest decrease. So, Simon, that to me paints a fairly encouraging picture of what agents were experiencing in 2025.
Yeah, despite, I mean, this is why we do the research, despite all the headlines, what everyone's saying, you know, I mean, you look back at the 20A data, you know, the market grew in instructions by 2%, sales grew by 2%, 2.3%, overall transactions had grown by 10.1%. You know, if you weren't growing in 2025, you weren't riding the market. If you grew significantly, you're bucking the market. But, you know, 10% or more growth is exceptionally good. I mean, I'm all credit to those people. They've gone above and beyond what the market did. But the market grew. So if you lost instructions and lost market than what you'd had before, you've gone doubly backwards because you went backwards in a growing market.
And
that's why, you know, the reason why we do this is if you are someone who's growing backward, you think that is the state of the market, look at the data we provide and go, okay, something I'm doing isn't quite working. I don't want anyone to fail. So it may be that you've made some decisions, or you even recognize you've made some decisions that have taken you backwards. think about by reading The Voice of the Agent, read back issues of The Voice of the Agent, download copies of the videos, look at the growth formulas that we share, learn from the people who are growing and apply those lessons to your business, and you can turn that around. Because as you can see from the data, the market's doing well, a good chunk of your peers are doing well, you can do well.
And this is, I think, where we, you mentioned at the start, how can agency owners use this data? Well, I don't want to pour battery acid on anyone's cornflakes, but if you're one of the 21%, 22%, sorry, of agents who saw your vendor numbers decrease in 2025, it's quite easy to go on existing in an introspective bubble, convincing yourself this is market factors, that this is things beyond your control, everyone else is experiencing the same challenges. But actually, although it's a bit of a tough lesson to hear, you are an outlier in yeah. It would appear. And so that might just be a little wake-up call that you need to look at your operations and think, well, why am I bucking the trend? Why are the majority either seeing growth or at least staying broadly the same? And so that then leads us on to what people are expecting in the year ahead. So with 2025 in mind, you probably think logically people are hoping for more of the same. But obviously with the current economical and political climate, you never quite know. But yeah, we do see a very optimistic picture from the majority of agents. I say very optimistic, but actually I'd say realistically optimistic. So we've got just under half of all agents, 48%, are anticipating modest growth. That's up to 10% in 2026. With still, interestingly, more agents are anticipating significant growth than there are agents who are going to stand still and stay broadly the same. We've got 23% anticipating significant growth, 21% staying broadly the same, and only a combined total of 9% of agents are anticipating either modest or significant decrease in vendor numbers. So again, I think we're in a market where agents can feel quite confident of where they stand.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting when it plays out against what people said about the actual, how they thought the market was, you know, strong to weak. And it was like a bell curve with most people in the middle. Because this is two sample groups, what's interesting is that lettings is not as positive. They're still okay, but they're not. And we found this consistently is sales businesses tend to be, people who do sales and people who do pure sales tend to be more positive about the market. Now, two things may be at play there. That's the reality they expect. They're also salespeople. They have targets to hit. And, you know, the one thing I know about the best salespeople is they, you know, they need to stay positive to succeed. So there has to be a confidence that things will grow because they need to hit those targets. If they thought things were going to get bad, they're more likely to miss their targets. Your destiny is set often by what you think. So I can get it. I get it. But despite people thinking overall the market's going to be okay, leaning towards not a bit nervous about, a bit cautious, individual businesses think, I'll be all right.
Yeah.
I'll grow. And that's great. You know, there's a lot of market to go for. And, you know, that overall, if you take certain political players out of the mix, the basics are not weak. So, you know, we're not building enough houses. People need to move. We've had a bit of a delay back end of 2025 because of the delayed budget. So, you know, and everyone I'm speaking to in the industry, people are feeling really positive about the start of 2026. So, you know, that would reflect the conversation having. And anecdotally, I hear that 500 and so agents tell me the same in a survey. So overall, I think there's a lot of market to go for. Feel good.
And to continue that feel good theme, which I'm certainly enjoying, I think the only thing that could improve an agent's mood, because we've already found out that we feel relatively positive about how things went in 2025. We're pretty optimistic about how things are going to go in 2026. But if house prices are going to crash, then that's going to be a bit of a mood killer at the tail end of all this lovely optimism. So next up, we asked agents what they thought would happen to property values in their area in 2026, and that ranged from crashing by 30% or more, all the way up to significant increase. And again, we saw cautious optimism here. The vast majority of agents, 58%, reckon that prices were going to stay more or less the same, didn't they? And then we've got the next most popular answer was a modest increase of up to 10%, which was 26%. And again, we're looking at a minority of just 16% of all agents who thought that they were going to reduce even a little bit, all the way down to just one. That includes 1% who thought that property prices were going to crash. And I probably even know who that 1% was. I
It's a certain person and four of his mates. Because
Yes.
that would have statistically, that's how it
What
out.
I'd like to do is get the 1% who thought that prices were going to crash and the 1% who thought that prices are going to increase significantly and
Put in
get
a room
them
together.
together on a podcast.
Hey, if you or someone who said increase significant property prices, give Toby a call. If you think the crash, give Toby a call. Let's set that up. I think that'd be fascinating.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, interestingly, it was the net position there is quick maths plus 12%. So what we were saying is, up until this beginning of this year, people were buying or selling plus 25%. How British people plus 20%. The industry, give or take, plus 12%. So again, the industry is more cautious than the market, but overall, on balance, house prices are going to increase. And if you've done any economics and read the first book about supply and the first chapter on supply and demand, it kind of, as day follows night and night follows day, it kind of feels like that's going to happen, apart from regional variances, obviously.
Continuing the conversation about property values, but also now starting to bring in agency fees as well. Now, I'm not going to fall into the trap again of trying to describe wiggly lines to you, but from what we can see here, it's very clear that the vast weighting of properties that agents sold in the last year was in sort of the mid-market range. It sort of peaks in the 300 to 500,000 pound value range, and it probably sounds obvious, but the minority of properties were in the prime sector, a very low minority actually. The chart really dips at the higher end of the market, and we're talking about quantity of properties coming to market here. But I think that's particularly interesting when we combine it with fees versus
Yes.
property prices. And this is a pattern that we've seen before, and I've heard you speak about before. So tell us what we're looking at here.
Well, I mean, a nod to David Linley of By Design, who basically I produced the data the first time, and said, "Have you ever compared fees and prices to see what basically happens to the market?" I mean, that's a really good idea. It's a mathematical and statistical nightmare to do. So, thank you, David, for that. But we do it. And it comes out interesting, and it's coming consistent every year we've done it, is higher value properties have higher fees. Now that's always like, yeah, well, we know that, but if you think about what the implications of that are, they're really quite massive. And I think we get into this in a slide partly down the report, is if you've got a higher value property with a higher fee, one property disproportionately delivers so much more money than another lower value property. And that's why you see certain brands go, we are just for the prime. Upper quartile, actually the upper quartile starts at about 450K. So actually you don't need that high to actually be in the top 25% of all properties. Now 75% of properties are below that number. So that's most properties. As you move up that, fees increase, and therefore as again you move a property even more disproportionately, a single property will represent a lot of the value. And actually, I think on the slide we show that, if I don't mind jumping ahead, because I get waxed over by this, is 76% of the instructions generate 42% of the fees. 24% of the instructions generate 58% of the fees, and just 1% of instructions generate 10% of the fees. You can see why some brands focus on the prime. And critically, and you can talk about this until the cows come home, which is, this is why if you're in the mainstream part of the market, you need to automate as much as possible and AI as much as possible, because you're going to do a lot of work to generate money. At the higher end, still a lot of work, but actually one property could pay for your quarter easily at fees at a higher level.
So just to reiterate that, so that 70% of all property transactions account for just 42% of all agency fees, which is, so that is the vast majority of agents who are working on what we call the mainstream market. So the, as we saw when we spoke about the previous chart, that peak of property prices between the £300,000 and £500,000 mark, they're working very hard for a minority of the fees, which is extraordinary.
It is. And the lessons there are, you know, if you want to play in the prime space, maybe consider having a dedicated brand separate, or buddy up with a prime brand nearby where you get on really well. And if you get a prime one, the worst thing you can ever do is, if your main play is mainstream, you try and sell a prime property, you won't have the network that makes an active market for that property. The best thing you can do is be an introducer and get an introduction fee. And remember, if they achieve their 2% fee, now, I even know agents who go, oh, it was such a high value property, we actually charge a lower fee. Like, that's not what the market does. That's not what the market tells you to do. It tells you that higher value properties command higher fees.
Yeah. And on that, before we move on the average fee being charged by agents, we stand at an average of 1.2% across all transactions, but the swing between the lower end of the market. So if we start with properties that come under £200,000, we're looking at an average of 1.1% fee.
Yeah.
But once we get into the prime market, £3 million plus, that's gone all the way up to 1.8%. And there is, you know, a logical gradual increase of fees as we go up through the price brackets. It goes up slowly, 1.1%, 1.2%. 1.3% by the time we're up to £500,000. But then there's this leap up from, we're in the £1 million bracket at 1.4%. And then there's this leap up in the £3 million bracket to 1.8%, which is out of whack with the rest of the data, which shows a gradual increase of fees. And then that super prime space really commands very high value fees.
Yeah. And again, this is a good sense check for you as an agent, if you're out there, is, look at where you operate and look at the fees you charge. There are some amazing, I'm not one, but there are some amazing trainers out there who can get your mindset right about getting higher fees. You know, the aforementioned Simon Gates does a really good job on this, explaining it. But there's multiple people out there who can explain how you get to higher fees. Getting lower fees is a mindset condition. Getting higher fees is I can't do it. I'm not a salesperson. But good salespeople can do it with the right training.
Okay, let's switch our focus now across to the wonderful world of lettings, which...
Your happy space.
Yeah, brings back many, many happy memories and a sense of overwhelming relief that I don't have to deal with guarantors any longer. So we asked a similar set of questions about lettings, and... did the number of landlords you work with increase, stay the same, or decline in 2025? We've got a bit of a spread here, but again, the majority is weighted towards the centre, with 38% reporting staying broadly the same, 30% reporting a modest increase of up to 10%, 18% reporting a modest decrease, and then again, lower percentages at the polar extremes, 8% significant growth, 6% significant decrease, which... basically, I think gives us the impression that for the majority of letting agents, it's been a steady 2025 in terms of landlord numbers. That obviously then is particularly interesting to me when we look ahead, because we all know that 2026 is going to be a slightly busy year in the world of lettings, with, you know, once in a generation upheaval and reform coming in May. So I was particularly interested to see how lettings agents felt about their landlord numbers looking forward in 2026. And I won't lie to you, I was anticipating this to be a fairly bleak picture that was being painted.
You and me both. And I
Yeah.
think you saw that last year. It was actually almost bleaker last year than it is this year.
Well, I think that this year I'm seeing more optimism than I was anticipating from lettings agents. So, to quickly summarize, 35% of agents expect landlord numbers to stay the same. We're looking at a combined total of 41% of agents expecting growth in landlord numbers in 2026, which includes 12% expecting significant growth. And then on the more pessimistic side of things, 19% expecting a modest decrease and 6% expecting significant decrease in the number of landlords who they deal with. And I must confess that this surprised me, but I'm pleased to see a certain bullish positivity from lettings people.
Yeah, I don't know the latest number on the number of landlords that Rightmove and Zoopla and others are predicting are going to leave the market, because there is this prediction of this landlord exodus, isn't there? And
Well, I'll on that, so I don't know about expectations, but
okay.
the data we got from 20CI showed over the last 12 months a 9% growth in landlords. Now, obviously, the question is that will that survive the May cliff edge?
So again, it's like, looking at what the market is doing, if you weren't growing in 2025, you've doubly bucked the market. You've not only grown, you've gone backwards in a growing market, which is interesting. And, again, this is where, we'll talk to some specialists about this and we'll get the data, but it's kind of like a lot of people come into being a landlord accidentally.
Yes.
It still remains, if you just take rental yields as an income percentage, you can come out quite badly if you don't think about it. But capital gain, what's actually happening to the property price, once you factor that in, if you run your portfolio properly, it's hard to lose money, especially if you use a professional letting agent who avoids void periods and maintains the property properly, looks after deposits and all that kind of stuff in the correct way. DIY comes with some risks. So I suppose it sort of makes sense. But yeah, I think the noise, this is where there's a real problem with the media. You would feel this is really, really bad. I think what the data is saying is that good agents in both sales and lettings will prosper because they're running their shop properly. They've got the processes in place. They're out there having a compelling narrative being told, doing some excellent videos taught by Toby, using AI properly. But those, in the kindest possible way, the ones who are struggling are maybe not adopting the practices of the most successful. And again, if you're not competing with one of the more successful ones, reach out to them. The industry I found, despite it can be sometimes quite parochial, if you locally, because you're all fighting for everything over competition and market share, over a larger area, if you reach out to someone who's not in your area and ask them for advice, people are normally quite generous.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah, and I think especially I found in the world of lettings, where I think there is almost a sense that you need that support community with everything that is being thrown at you by government, the public, landlords, tenants, and everyone. People are generous with their time and generous with their knowledge, and growing that kind of network is very important.
Absolutely.
So that's encouraging. I'm
Yeah,
pleased to
you're good. You're
bring
very good.
some encouraging news to our lettings listeners. What about rental values? Is that going to sour this at all? Well, again, expectations of rental values in 2026 are pretty positive, and obviously this comes off the back of several years of rental value growth. We've got 43% thinking that rents are going to stay pretty much the same, 40% anticipating a modest increase in rental values, 7% a significant increase, and then just 10% increasing, sorry, 10% anticipating some form of rent decrease, with 0%
You
expecting a
tell
rental
me.
crash.
You tell me. Why would rental values fall?
Well, what's interesting, and again, I'll refer back to the data we got from 20CI, is that over the last 12 months, rent increases have fallen. Not rents, but rent increases. And the rental growth over the last 12 months has actually only been 0.5%. Whereas we've had years in very recent history where rental values have grown by more than sort of 7, 8, I think coming out of COVID, maybe even 9% one year. And the two stats that 20CI have given us on the rentals market add up. 9% growth in rental homes has caused a slowing in rental values because we're finally getting more supply coming to the market, which has cooled off those rental values. And we must also be hitting affordability thresholds as well,
Easily.
as landlords actually sort of take stock of the fact that it's better to have a paying tenant than one who can't afford the rent. And so, yes, I think that that conclusion that rents might edge up in the next year proves pretty easy to reach.
One thing I'll just throw in here is because I've worked very close with the guys at Cavendish up in the northwest, and I don't know, and you can verify this true, is one thing I think they do, which is absolutely fantastic, they do a tenancy health check.
Ah, yes, yeah.
And they will look at the state. So if you're an agent out there and you're not offering a tenancy health check, this is where you explain it in more detail. But what it sounds like, as I understand it, is there's a whole series of checks that the agent takes you through to make sure that your portfolio is running as effectively as it can, and the income is protected, void periods are minimized, but rules are obeyed, just to make you ready. So I mean, please, you can wax more lyrical about this. Is to you, what does tenancy health check mean?
Well, what I'd say to lettings folk is you have such a great opportunity off the back of the Renters' Rights Act. Simon's now sitting back, making a cup of tea. He knows he's set me off here. So,
Join.
tenancy health check is a great place to start, and with additional legislation coming in, it's a great thing to offer to landlords to capitalize on their uncertainty of whether their tenancies will be compliant in the new order in May. But what I would also say to lettings folk is I was drafting a social media post earlier today on this very thing. The number of social media posts I've seen from lettings agents saying words to the effect of renting and lettings is going to completely change in May 2026. Make sure you're ready. That is 1% of what you could be saying about all this legislation, all this reform. You need to pull this legislation apart, go into detail, highlight to landlords that they might get 40 grand fines come May. There is so
Hold a
much to
big
say about
landlord show.
this.
Hold a big landlord show.
Hold a landlord event or a webinar. Scare the bejabers out of them. It's not hard to do at the minute. Make them feel that they really need a helping hand at this moment in time. It's not a hard thing to make landlords feel like that at the minute, because most of them do genuinely need help right now. It's just making them aware, helping them to learn that they need help. Many of them won't even know that. So yes, plenty of opportunity. I know that the Renters' Rights Act is unwelcome to many in the lettings world, but from a marketing and growth perspective, it presents you with an opportunity.
And I was actually looking for the data there. I actually can't find it because it's in an older file. I should have had that ready. But the number of people who, when we served them last September, didn't know about the renters' rights change.
Oh yeah, I think it
And
was off the top of my head, I think it was 12%, I think.
yeah. And then
Yeah.
the number who knew very little.
Yes.
And I can
And
guarantee you
those two
there's.
figures combined to it was around the 30% mark. It's 30 to 35%.
And despite that, it now a some of it going on into actual action towards Christmas Day or Christmas Eve or something like that, or
Yeah,
Boxing Day or something.
27th of December it
Yeah,
was.
St.
Merry
Stephen's Day,
Christmas.
and then obviously got a big bang in May.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that people will still have their head in the sand and think this isn't going to affect me.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. And you've always talked about this, and it's why I've always I completely agree with you. Is don't waste a good opportunity. Don't waste a good crisis.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, I want to move on to fees
Yes.
now, because Renters' Rights Act is going to run and run and run and run. But yeah, it's quite the opportunity if you approach it in the right way. So we asked about fully managed fees And I would wager a bet that every lettings agent listening to this podcast right now would be able to answer, they would know the answer to this question before we've even got to it, because a lettings fee, the typical lettings fee, has been 10% since time immemorial. It's carved into Moses' tablets. It's been like that for so long. So average lettings fee, we had 39% saying they charge between 8 and 10% for a fully managed service, and an equal 39% saying they charge between 10 and 12% for a fully managed service. Which just confirms what we all know, which is that fully managed fees have changed very little over time. Yes, rents have gone up, and your 10% would have risen accordingly with that. But I do think that there's a big argument, and I know several agents who are very strong on the idea of a great many agents underselling themselves or undercharging. Again, I'll just throw forward a couple of weeks. If you're into lettings, then listen to the Sophie Lang episode that's coming up. We were speaking about the idea of valuing your own time, and you know, you charge £100 a month on a £1,000 a month rental property. You deduct all of your expenditure, your PAYE, whatever, your outgoings, and what are you left with? And it scares me how little some lettings professionals value their own time, based on what they charge to their landlords. So yes, that 10%, give or take, is probably not going to charge anytime soon. But I do know some agents who are getting extremely good at being able to properly charge what they are worth to their landlords, whether that's their monthly fee or additional costs.
You talk about, you know, the 10% carved in tablets of stone, and it's like, you know, that is the law, and we see that with the graph, you know, 39%, 39%. That sits on either side of that 10% point. So that's kind of like where it is. 19%, one in five, are charging 12% more, you know, and some of them are charging, you know, 4% of that, you know, 19%, one in five, charging 15% or more. One thing that we can't do with these reports, because, you know, they could go run on for hundreds and hundreds of pages, is all the data that's behind them. And we can, we what we do, and we do it once a year now, is we do a big analysis of the data and goes, what is it about these high fee, high growth agencies that stands out? So if you get part five of 2025, it has the secret formula in there. It tells you what successful agents do. We'll do that again this year once we've got the data in. But I already know, and I won't reveal now, what the who those people are, not personally, but I know the profile of the companies and what they are doing to achieve those higher fees. So if you think it's not possible to charge more than 12%, bear in mind that one in five of your colleagues are doing it.
Yes.
And interestingly, this one isn't related to price of property. That was the interesting thing for me, is there's less of a relationship between price of property and the fees they charge than there is with the sales market.
That's an interesting brain teaser for our listeners to ponder, until we get to that edition. Is what do you think the high fee earners in lettings all have in common? And if you want to, if you do want to look back at part five, from 2025, then they're all on the Unchained website. You can go and read that report in full.
Let me stress that again, freely available. Everything we're talking about is freely available. And if you sign up to our newsletter, you get it delivered at least a day earlier than everyone else. So,
Including this report, of course, all the data we're referring to here. If you'd like to look at the charts and read the analysis for yourself, then, like Simon says, that
you can listen along with us while reading it.
karaoke style. So very briefly covering let only fees then for lettings agents. They were far more broadly dispersed across the ranging from below 8% to over 15%. The most popular option was 8 to 10%. But I was interested in this because, again, with my lettings hat on, it demonstrated to me that there is both uncertainty and also varying approaches to how agents approach a let-only service. And I know, speaking to agents, this is something that is also under the microscope, because I think there's a common perception that let-only is potentially going to be either harder to do or simply less attractive to do once the Renters' Rights Act has been implemented, because of monthly rolling tenancies. So again, obviously our agents here have a broad range of approaches to let only, some of them offering it as a key service, others perhaps just doing it purely to maintain contact with let only landlords and doing it at a lower rate. Yes, that obviously shows a bit of uncertainty when it comes to let only, I think. So, moving on now, let's have a look at generally competition and challenges. This section is called. So we're reverting back to sales and lettings agents now. We're bringing the sales agents back into the room here. So first of all, we looked at the amount of competition on average in each patch, and how many competitors do you estimate you directly compete with for either vendors and or landlords? Typically, we had 30% reporting between 6 and 9. Then it went to 22% between 10 and 19. And then 18% between 4 and 5, 17% 2 to 3. So again, as I think we're becoming accustomed to, we have a picture here of a very competitive marketplace. Every agent has, we're basically saying between 52% and between 6 and 19 competitors in their local area. So heightened competition for each landlord, heightened competition for each vendor.
Yeah, and you need to really stand out. Bear in mind, the data's not in here because it comes in our consumer report, but I think the number of agents that people can think of is between three and four. This is the public, and a third can think of not one. Meanwhile, agents themselves are competing, as you say, between 6 and 19. I think the average is around about 12, consistently year on year, give or take. So you've got to set yourself up against those 12 and see where you sit. And bear in mind that only three of them will come to mind, or four of them will come to mind for the member of the public. So, for those who come to one of my training courses or go to one of Toby's, we do free webinars all the time. Go to one of Toby's Make Your Business Memorable. You've got 12 competitors, and customers can only think of three or four. Or come to my 30 years of marketing or one of my webinars, and I talk about the power of brand and those kind of details there, and how you become distinctive and differentiated, which is really important. Not standing out for standing out's sake, but standing out because you have something different to say that is relevant to your audience. And this data just tells me, with a huge spike of, okay, let's look, add up the numbers there quickly. 52%, 62%, 63% of people have six or more competitors. How do you compete? Have you ever sat down with your colleagues and sat down and gone, how are we different? Or are we just, it's a different sticker above the door, it's just the same old, same old, same old? Because in this world, people will choose best known. People will choose the best known that really stand out. And Toby's video courses, Toby's Make Your Business Memorable creativity stuff, really shows you how to do that. And we know we're planning one again from March or April time. But do come to that when you can. I'm doing 30 years of marketing in an hour in February. Learn these lessons of how you do it. If I ever was inclined to start an agency, I'd have 40% within a year. Market share. Follow the rules.
There's a phrase which I see on so many estate agency websites, which is estate agency, but not as you know it. And I want to take those words and fire them into the face of the sun, because the vast majority of them do estate agency precisely how I know it, exactly how I know it. I know it so well. They all are so similar. And I know this is a bit of a pet subject for us both, but I see so many agents proactively expend so much time and money and effort in deliberately trying to look and do the same things as everybody else. We have a fear of standing out when we should have a fear of blending in.
Yeah, and if you're for everybody, you're for nobody. Know who your audience is and be for them. Be where they are. Be with their interests. I mean, we're straying into marketing probably a bit too much. But what this is what this data tells you is, oh my word, look at my competitor set. If I've got nine, if you are a supermarket, realistically, genuinely, you probably have two to three competitors who are like-minded. Now, if you're M&S, you've probably got Waitrose. If you're Tesco, you'll have more. But even there, the competitor set is not that big. Okay, let's go through it. You've got Sainsbury's. You've got Waitrose, some of your customers, but not all of them. You've got Asda. You've got maybe Co-op. You've maybe got Aldi and Lidl are there as well. Okay, we're still, I think, have we got to five there?
Five, yeah.
Big brands have 25 to 38% market share. And the other stuff that we did, and again, it's back in the reports. This is why you need to read all the reports, genuinely, if you're out there, is we got 28 of this amazing analysis of what the market share of the top two estate agents in every single postcode district in the UK was. And it was 37%. So if you take that 37% from 100% and then divide that by the remaining 10 competitors, there's about 6% market share each. So you've got to go, it's the way the top two hoover up market share. So you need to be really, really well known. Use the renters' rights change to be really well known to know that market. Use the fact of what's going on in your local property market to talk about the sales area, because you need to stand out and you need to get to number one as fast as possible. And now, that was postcode district. Be number one in your postcode sector. Be number one on your street. Just be number one somewhere and build from there. Sorry, here endeth the lesson.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the good news is that next month's report is on marketing, so you'll be hearing a lot more about this soon. Okay. We've got a couple of questions left to round this up with, and this is one of the ones that I look forward to most when this report comes around, which is which of these is your single biggest challenge right now? So this is fascinating to, business owners, and employees and members of the team. What is the thing that they are struggling against most at the minute? And an overwhelming majority put the same response, which was enough new landlords, new vendors, finding them. And this is ultimately what estate agency boils down to. It's we need to find new customers because that is the sole route to growth for us. 36% said that was their main conundrum, followed by 16% who talked about managing costs and cash flow. 14%, which was market uncertainty and economic conditions, and then it drops down to single figures for other factors. But we're going to find it very difficult again to steer clear of marketing in this section. But people want to find out how to find new customers. How do you do that then?
Yeah, what I find interesting, there's actually the reason why I wandered off, you can't see that, like it's against me, but I wandered off to get last year's, should have had this out anyway. I was literally looking at when we asked this question last year. Note to self, I will do more year-on-year comparisons at some point. It just takes a lot of time. What I found interesting between sales and lettings, we actually split them last time, which we haven't done this year to try and make the book a little bit slimmer, is technology was much higher last year.
Yes.
And I wonder if that's kind of now technology sort of being adopted more. It's right down there. We're
Four
keeping pace with
percent
technology,
this year.
64%.
Yeah.
But guess what? More customers. Now, if only there was a discipline that was specifically designed
Strap in, folks.
and was built to generate leads. If only, I wish, what's it called? Farketing. Starketing. Oh yeah, marketing. And this isn't sales. Sales is not marketing. Marketing is not sales. Marketing then sales. Getting your message out there, building awareness and interest is what marketing is all about. So if you aren't getting enough vendors, you aren't getting enough landlords, talk to some marketing specialists. At Unchained, we share so much for free. We don't put it all behind a paywall like others. We want to help people who are, you don't want to pay for our services. I know some of our competitors use our free data. I know they do because they've played it back at me. I go, that's no problem. I'll take a commission at some point. But marketing is the solution to the problem that most agents, what's the number there? 36%.
Yeah.
A third of agents. If they could just get their marketing right, their life would become easier.
Now, won't it be interesting? Because I anticipate that there will be a disconnect here between we now know that the single most taxing challenge shared by the industry is finding new vendors and new landlords. And I will be very interested to discover next month how much people are investing, either time-wise or financially, in their marketing. And as you've said to me in the past, substitute the word marketing for growth. How much people are investing in their growth? And I wonder, of that 36%, how many of them are heavily investing their time and their resources into their marketing? We shall find out in the
We
Voice of the
will.
Agent in February.
Ooh.
Okay.
Well,
So,
and again, the trailer of what, I mean, for those who haven't read last year's report, growth agents did a fifth more. They invested a fifth more. They did a fifth more. We moved around a little bit in terms of different channels, different things. But the number of agents who just don't have social media in their top five blows my mind every time. But they did a fifth more. And the interesting thing about that fifth is when I did that calculation, I had the overall number, and I had the growth agents. What I'd never had done until I did a conference back, our conference in November, is I hadn't removed those growth agents from that bigger number. So it wasn't 25% more, it was 35% more. Because once you remove the growth agents that drag the average up of everyone out of the everyone else was even worse. So the difference became 35%. So it is. I wish it was more complicated. I generally do, Toby. It's kind of like I almost feel like my work here is done when it comes to marketing, is just do more marketing. And it's like, I had a conversation with an agent the other day, and I demonstrated there was a 99% correlation. Correlation means there is a relationship between the amount of direct mails they sent and the number of instructions they were receiving. So I basically said to them, look, you just need to do more direct mail. All that other stuff you're doing, forget it. Just do more direct mail.
I feel like we should have finished on this one because it gives us a wonderful segue into next month's report. But
Well,
we have
you're the editor. You could just edit it and
Well, that's true. But the problem is, Simon, I'm lazy and I don't want to do that. So we actually have one more thing to look at.
yes.
Which is we finished our survey by asking agents about their plans to either sell or acquire another agency in 2026, which I was really interested to see the results of this one. And it probably goes without saying that the vast majority, 70%, neither plan to sell nor acquire a new agency next year. But of those who were considering, only 8% of agents intend to sell their business in 2026, whilst 22% of agents are hoping to buy one. And again, with my lettings hat on, this is part of the reason why you grow a lettings agency, so that when the time comes, when either the legislation gets too much for you or you just reach that retirement age, you have an asset to sell. And also from a growth perspective, finding new landlords is tough. Buying them is a lot easier. And so it is interesting to see that, three times as many agents are looking to buy an agency than they are looking to sell, which might tell you what a challenge that could therefore be, or alternatively, what might happen to portfolio values in 2026 if we do see this discrepancy between supply of agencies versus demand for agencies. Interesting sort of split that
Yeah, and
between the vote.
what's interesting, I think, is the motivation of people who filled in those questions will be very interesting. And 70% doesn't surprise me. Again, people are running businesses, they're going to carry on with them. I think if you ticked a box that said, I intend to sell my business, you've been on quite an emotional journey already to reach that decision point. You've gone through the process of going, yeah, I am going to sell my business in the next year, not ever. In 2026, that's the question. Says, do you plan to sell or acquire business in 2026? So this next 11 and a bit months now. So they're quite motivated sellers at that point. I think a larger percentage of people are going to go, yeah, I'd acquire another agent. I'd consider that. Yeah, it seems very likely there. But I think they're probably less motivated buyers. They're speculative, but it does suggest that a third of those people who are acquiring will succeed. Because if you make like 24% to make the math easier, a third of 24 is 8%. Therefore, those 8% are going to sell to a third of those acquirers, and those acquirers are going to have a business growing because they've bought another business. So it's kind of, it would be the problem if it's the other way around, which is there were more sellers than there are acquirers. But there's more people who want to sell than ever want to buy. This way around, it says if you're selling a business, this is a good time to sell a business because this is going to be a competitive market. Speak to is it Lucy Noonan and the gang at Atomic about getting your business ready to sell, because at the moment it looks like buyer demand is greater than seller opportunity. And as we know from the iron law of economics, when demand exceeds supply, prices rise.
Absolutely. So the survey concluded really by with a set of demographic questions, which obviously help us to get even further insights into the data. I don't particularly feel the need to analyze the demographics. I don't know about you, Simon, but all I'll say is these questions that we ask you at the end of the survey, if you do complete the survey, help us to further analyze the data we've got to see if there are splits between, whatever it might be, ages, seniority, that kind of thing. So that's why they're in there.
Yeah, we could exclude them from the reports. We include them just to be transparent. The reality is, I use them and the team use them when we check. It's just a sense check against is, are we missing somewhere significantly? If you look at the data and the independent third party data we've got of the industry as well, it's pretty representative. We're not missing a huge slug of people. Say, for example, there are no people in this in the West Midlands, for example. If you had a 0% coverage there, that would be a concern because we're missing a key part of the country. But every region, every gender, every seniority, every size of company is in some way representative. And for our benefit, which if we talk to you individually, we can cut out the data that's relevant to you. Now, sadly, that will come with a cost. So if you want the data, there's that. But what we do when we do our conference, which will be coming up in November 26, is we do more cross breaks between the data to kind of show the differences. But if you do get a chance to fill in a survey soon, please do, because the more responses we get, the better the analysis.
And on that point, the Voice of the Agent now runs monthly so that we can bring you this level of insight on a more frequent basis. Simon, what's coming up next month?
A personal favorite, marketing and portals.
Excellent.
So we do a lot of data on the portals, a lot of consumer data, and a lot of agency data, and the marketing excluding portals. And again, a lot of consumer data and a lot of agency data. And then that quickly followed after that in March is AI and PropTech. So what we try and do is get some really good topics in the first 3 months to give everyone everything they need. Because normally it would come out in February time this anyway, but we're able to get this one out in January, state of the market, state of the marketing, and then state of tech in these first 3 months. And also we recognize getting a 120, 170 page book is a lot to read. Having this one is a quick digest. See where you are, wait for next month, but please fill in the survey. I'll keep saying that. Please fill in the survey.
Do fill in the survey. And just to reiterate, if you would like to read this or any of the previous surveys completely for free in full detail, you'll find them on the Unchained website. There'll be a link in the show notes. And if you would like to be informed about future surveys so you can complete them when they come around, sign up to our mailing list. Again, the link will be in the show notes. Well, I think that anyone who is still listening not only deserves to be very proud of themselves, but should feel smug at knowing that they are now better informed than anyone who didn't make it this far.
Fantastic. That was really good. Enjoyed that.
Yep. Thank you very much, Simon.
Speak to you later. Take care, Toby.